Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency Credit Canada and by Home Equity Bank, provider of the CHIP reverse mortgage. It begins the very first time you take your young child to the grocery store. I want the... No, we are not buying the that or the this or the other thing. And as the years go on, the requests get bigger and bigger and bigger, and the reasons behind the no become, you know, a little more nuanced. For adult children in today's real estate market, there is an increase in the requests for help on down payments. No surprise, right? But whether it's to help them, you know, pay their rent or to save for a down payment for their first home, you might be putting yourself in a tough financial situation if you say yes. So how do you navigate this, this part of the family dynamic, family and financial dynamic? Doug Hoyes is a licensed insolvency trustee with Hoyes Michaelis, and he joins us now to talk about some of the pros and cons and strategies to doing it right. Hello, Doug.
Hi, Bruce.
You have seen this go sideways, and I think that's why I wanted to talk to you about it in particular. What has happened? What have you seen?
Well, the classic example would be what you described. My adult kid comes to me and says, hey, I need some help. Maybe it's help paying the rent. Maybe it's help paying a down payment, whatever. So I say, okay, you know what? Once a parent, always a parent. I'm going to help you out. So here's some money. And if I've got the money sitting there in a savings account, I've got tons of money and I don't really need it, fine, give it to the kid, no problem. Where it goes sideways is, number one, where I as a parent borrow money to help my kid in the hopes that, well, they're going to pay it back, so it's no big deal. Well, if they can't pay it back, I've now taken on debt. I've now got debt payments every month. I've still got my own payments to make. And if I'm a parent of an adult child, that probably means I'm over the age of 20. I might be 40, 50, 60. I might be retired. I might be living on a pension. I might have a fixed income. And so when you throw a new debt payment on top of that, that can be the recipe for a disaster.
And by the time they're walking into your office, things are can be pretty dire, right? It's not just, oops, I need to cut back on Uber Eats for a week or two, and then all that. That'll get me back on track. If they're coming to see you, how would you describe their financial situation?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's dire. Like, I'm the last person you call, not the first person you call, right? If my kid can't pay me back the money I lent them, well, I'm probably going to talk to my bank about getting another loan, maybe getting an extension. I may talk to other family members, other kids I've got who maybe can help me out. If none of that works, then they come and see me. And in most cases, it's because they are now missing payments on that debt payment they took over to help their kid. So it's a very dire situation because you're faced with the problem, do I pay my rent and buy groceries or do I pay the bank for this bank loan? What do I do? It's a very difficult situation.
I'm going to ask you to oversimplify because I can imagine people get into this situation where they're calling you for two reasons. One, they never should have done it in the first place. They're just living too close to the edge and it was a bad idea. And two, something material changed. So, you know, you'd say, okay, they've got the cash flow, they can do this. And then, whoa, something changed, a job loss, a divorce, or something like that. What percentage would be in each of those two categories? Would it be 80%? Listen, you did not do the math. Or is it 80% circumstances threw them for a loop?
Yeah, I think probably it's more the first one that you probably shouldn't have done this in the first place. And then it gets compounded by the additional problems. But there would certainly be some people in both categories. They shouldn't have done it. And then things got worse. And it may be that they were pretty close to the edge at the start. And then, I don't know, something crazy happens. Like we have a lockdown because of some virus or something.
That would never happen. I don't even know what you're talking about.
If something like that was to happen, an unanticipated event, it throws you off. So if you are the parent and you are faced with this decision, number one, you better start looking ahead. Okay, what could possibly go wrong? Is there a chance that I'll be able to service this on my own or not? Because you cannot rely on your kid to be paying you back because they might not be able to pay you back. So if they can't pay you back, what kind of situation is that going to put yourself in? That's the first question I'd be asking myself.
Yeah. And the other dynamic indirectly would be co-signing on debt. So you may take the loan out as the parent and pass that on in the form of a gift to the kid. That's one way. You could also co-sign. Big, flashing red light of caution on that. Tell us more about how someone should think about that.
I mean, that co-signing is giving them all the money. So we think of co-signing as, yeah, okay, no problem here. I'll sign the piece of paper. I don't have to fork out any cash. It's no big deal. Yeah, no. Co-signing means you are 100% liable for that debt. So if you co-sign on your kid's mortgage and there's a housing crash, they lose their home, whatever, you're responsible for the whole thing. You co-sign for their car loan and they can't pay it. The car gets repossessed. You're on the hook for the whole thing. So don't think of it as co-signing, which of course is what it is. Think of it as, I am giving them all of the money that I am signing for. Am I able to service that debt if they can't pay it? If not, you want to avoid co-signing at all costs.
There are various shades of this is a bad idea. And one of the things that would shade it into worse idea is sourcing debt that isn't simply borrowing against the equity of your house, which could be super low interest. It's like, you know, nothing. Is that a red flag in and of itself if you're borrowing from somewhere other than home equity where the rate is certainly going to be a—
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you could put it on a ladder. So if you're not borrowing to help your kid, okay, fine. You're using cash that you're not earning much money on, no big deal. You know, your savings or whatever. If you're borrowing again, your house sucks and there's no mortgage on it, you're getting a line of credit at 4% interest, okay, much less risk for you. But then if you're going to a regular bank and getting a regular loan, the interest rate's higher. If you're getting a cash advance on your credit card, okay, now we're into massive territory because you might be paying close to 20%. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to one of those second tier lenders that are advertised right now, the interest rate can easily be 45, 55%. I see it every week. If you're doing that, and yeah, there's almost no way you're ever going to be able to pay it back if that's your only source of funds. So I would absolutely say that's a massive red flag.
How would you paper this if you were the parent? And then the second question I'm asked is, how do you have the conversation with the kid about it? Because those two things are connected, but they're separate. So what's the paper that as a parent you would ensure that you have to outline the terms of the deal with the kid? And then separate but connected is, how do you have those conversations with your kid? Because some kids are like fully good to make those payments. And some kids, you'd want to give the parents head a shake because the kids never demonstrated an ability to be responsible about this stuff in their past.
Yeah. So you got two ways to go with it. The obvious right answer is to say, if your kid really needs the money, here you go. I'm giving you the money. It's not a loan. You can have it. I don't expect you to pay it back. And that way we don't have an uncomfortable Christmas dinner when we all get together. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess if you're giving kid number one some money, you got two other kids, then you're going to have a bit of family dynamic there. But that's something to think about. Now, if you want to do it in the form of a loan and the kid is agreeable to that, I guess it's your money, you can do whatever you want, then I would at the very least have a piece of paper where we write down, hey, I borrowed this much and this is when I'm going to pay it back and this is what the terms are. If you are helping your kid with a down payment on a house, then you are certainly legally able to register a second mortgage, a charge on the house for the money you gave the kid. So you're giving the kid a $100,000 down payment. The kid goes out, buys the house, gets their mortgage. You can then register a second mortgage for the $100,000 against the house. The kid doesn't even have to be making payments, or you don't even have to be charging them interest. But if in the future, you know, you die and the estate's being settled, well, at least one of your kids already has $100,000 of their inheritance. If the kid gets divorced, well, at the very least, that equity is tied up in the house. You're going to get paid. It's not going to be going in their divorce settlement. So if you are lending the money, make it a commercial transaction so that there's no confusion. Everyone knows what they're getting into. Put it in writing. Mm.
Is there anything else you would include in the estate plan on this? I mean, the second mortgage is one way. Is there anything else that you do to ensure that things didn't get messy in the unlikely event of your untimely demise?
Well, I mean, obviously papering it over, you could be registering security on other things. I mean, if the kid's got a car, you could put a lien against the car, I guess. The other thing you could do is actually modify your will that says, okay, I already gave Junior the first $100,000 of their inheritance. So if I'm dead tomorrow, they get $100,000 less than everybody else if it wasn't already documented in the form of a mortgage. So it's never pleasant, but yes, you should be thinking ahead to what can go wrong and then having it documented so that it doesn't become an issue in the future.
How are you still cheerful given the kind of horror stories that you see so regularly?
Or are you not actually cheerful? You are a cynical.
I'm very cheerful. I'm very cheerful. And I guess I hear the horror stories, but in almost all cases, there's a way to come out the other end. Mm. So it's knowing that, okay, bad stuff happened. And we all know the last 2 years have not been fun for most people. I believe tomorrow will be better. Here are the ways to deal with the debt and the other issues you've got. And if we can focus on tomorrow, focusing on fixing it, then that makes everybody a lot more pleasant, I find.
Yeah. Doug, thank you for being pleasant.
Happy to be with you, Bruce.
Doug Hoyes is with Hoyes Michaelis. They are licensed insolvency trustees. And just the point that I'd say that I'd pick up on from Doug, there are options out there. There are solutions. Our system has been designed to give people a fresh start. It is a painful call to make, but there are options out there.